Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. In this episode, we're going to explore some conspiracies that are out there. From our last episode, David, you had started talking about Montauk and the Philadelphia experiment. Just for a quick refresher, can you give the brief backstory to that?
This is my understanding about it. It's not vast, but my understanding is that in, I want to say it was the 40s or something like that. I'm not accurate on that. There's areas in Montauk, New York, which is at the very end of Long Island, where they were conducting experiments with electromagnetic frequencies and time-space relations. And, of course, in the interest of working with our defense system and our national defense and things like that. But some crazy things kind of happened as they were experimenting, allegedly. Of course, there's some people out there that say they were involved with these different projects. But what happened, what hasn't happened, of course, there's all sorts of theories around that.
Sounds like a really good conspiracy.
Yeah, of course, exactly.
So, yeah, from my knowledge, the whole Philadelphia experiment and the Montauk experiment are kind of like connected. I think Montauk was in the early 80s, early to mid 80s, somewhere like that, and the Philadelphia experiment was in the early to mid 40s. And right. My understanding, with the Philadelphia experiment back in World War II, they were trying to, hide ships from, enemy radar.
Right.
They found this way, like, oh, let's test this out and see what happens. And they did, and basically what it was is it created a wormhole, a time loop, a time tunnel from, World War II to, I think 1982, 1983, I think it was 1983, and where these two points in time were connected, and the 1983 point was in Montauk, and the World War II one was in the Philadelphia Bay. I think it's very difficult to talk about one without mentioning the other.
Right, yeah.
Because if you take them separately, there's a bunch of stuff that goes along with them. But if you put them together, it's kind of like, oh, there's like more, and it makes more sense now. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember from the brief knowledge of those two experiments and what was going on there.
I don't really know much more than just the idea of them experimenting with space-time kind of stuff, where they were trying to make use, from my understanding, it was these big giant electromagnetic generators aboard what I think was an aircraft carrier.
Oh, no, it was the little destroyer. It was the USS Eldridge.
Oh, okay. That they were trying to do this, and when they uncloaked, that basically things were just awry, that there was people embedded in bulkheads, and things were just kind of out of whack. People had lost their minds and lost their sanity. Some people just never even came back. There are all sorts of crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, I had heard of that too, and I think there was a movie back in the late 80s that named the Philadelphia Experiment that kind of tried to depict on the big screen what may or may not have happened, allegedly.
Right, yeah. They actually touched on quite a few of those things. They Hollywoodized it up at the end, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it. I saw it probably close to the time that, not long after it came out, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing it in, I think, the late 90s, early 2000s or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Okay, I could see where they kind of Hollywooded it up and everything. That kind of brings up an interesting idea that we've kind of talked about in the past. Do you think that physically, if we moved through time, that we would have any mental, emotional, or physical issues, or would it be like walking through a door in a house?
Well, I would say that it's like I always say, if somebody was teleported here from the 16th century, they might go insane because there's just too much for them to grasp and comprehend. Mm-hmm. If we were bouncing through time and we didn't really have any bearings and we didn't know what we were doing, sure, I think it could leave us insane. But the thing about it is the whole idea of time travel, like what they talk about in the whole Philadelphia experiment and link to Montauk, is I read something by a guy that was written who said he was involved with this, and he had gone forward in time and come back in time, and that it was just really out there stuff that this guy was writing about. the thing about it is time to me is too malleable, and time is too, if you go into the future 40 years from now, what future are you going into?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the future is so variable that when you go into the future, you, of course, to go into the future is to affect that specific timeline. Who knows if that's the timeline you're going to end up at or not?
Yeah.
If you're able to do that, you're messing with some things that are probably could be a little wonky. If, you know, if it was, if you're making a toy out of it.
Oh yeah. Kind of like, yeah, new for Christmas, time traveling wormholes. Your kids may never come back again.
Exactly. Which, I mean, some parents wouldn't mind. I mean, why don't you go play in the wormhole, Billy? And we'll come get you when supper's ready.
No, we'll maybe
let him play. Let's see. You might get lost in 300 years from now.
So. Parents would have to stick their hand through the wormhole and grab their kids by the collar and yank them back.
Yeah, they'll have that rope tied to them.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Kind of like when you send people in caves or whatever. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess it would depend on how you moved through time. If you could, you know, magically just change your body chemistry or body frequency or whatever and just naturally and organically phase out of time and or space and move to a different point in time and space, then, you know, you might be okay. But if you have to use some kind of machinery where they pelt you with all this kind of electromagnetic whatever, radiation, whatever it is, then one of the things I kept thinking about was just like, that has to have some kind of effect on your body because either physically where, you know, starts degrading cells or something like that, or like what you said with the whole mental thing where you get into a place where you're just kind of overwhelmed because of there's so many bright lights that you're not used to if you go too far into the future, too far in the past. And that's kind of what the whole Montauk Philadelphia experiment kind of brings up for me, is just like, the way that you move from one point in time to the next point in time, does that have a huge effect on, you know, any part of you? And in other words, or is it like opening a door in your house and walking through?
I don't think it's like opening a door through your house, because I think that we are electromagnetically tethered. I mean, we're integrated into our current space and time.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, I mean, let's go out there a little bit, because we like love to do that here.
We never do that.
Yeah, I know, right? Us? What? What red pill? I don't know what you're talking about. Well, here's the thing about this, is that if you think about it, if you go 40 years in the future, this planet is nowhere near where it was 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This planet and this solar system is constantly traveling through the universe or through, you know, around the galaxy or whatever. I guess on a certain level, on a certain frequency, it's in a certain place in a certain time. It's in a different, physically, actually, the planet physically is long way away from where it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about it is, if you really could travel back and forth through time like that, I think about it, you would have to kind of have be equipped to do that in the same way you have to be equipped to dive into the ocean.
Yeah.
You can only be underwater for so long before your air runs out. And not to mention, you have to go down and up very slowly, especially up, so you don't suffer things like the bends and whatnot, because it can be absolutely treacherous. And there's also, how far down can you go before you start feeling the pressure, the weight of the ocean, you know, cave in your lungs. I think that if you were to be bouncing back and forth in the timeline, it would be the same kind of thing.
So time travel akin to, you know, deep sea diving.
Right, exactly. You could only do it for so long. You'd have to be well protected. And really, you're never truly in your element when you do.
Hmm. Yeah, and also the other thing, you know, if you're under the water, you may not feel it, but you're being moved by the waves, and your ship that, you know, is up on the surface is being moved by the waves to a certain degree as well. Right. And, you know, you have you down below and the ship up below, up above. It's kind of like, you know, I think they have some kind of tether or tracker or something where the ship keeps track of the divers once they're underneath. And
right.
I'm not sure. I'm not a diver. I see what you're saying with the whole, the planet was not in this in this particular space, you know, 40 years ago. And if you don't have a connection to the planet and you go through time, you all of a sudden end up in time. And maybe that's why there have never been, you know, time travelers that we are absolutely positive of, because they end up going back in time and ending up in the middle of space somewhere.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, well, there's a rhythm and there's a shift, and everything is shifted to such a degree. You're going to have to match that shift, and I just don't know that we really can easily. And how do we know we don't time travel every time we just have a memory? You know.
Oh yeah. Well, there's that too. I'm referring more to physically, you know, showing up in a different place.
Well, I do think that if they're doing experiments with electromagnetics, and electromagnetics is hugely misunderstood, and I think that we would blow our technology wide open if we really understood how to use electromagnetics. I think it would be the key to us opening up abilities, human abilities, that are barely even tapped into right now, if we understood our own electromagnetic fields. I think electromagnetics is bigger than we even realize. And I think when you play with it on such a mechanistic level, when you're using devices and machineries, it's understandable that people would be half submerged into the bulkheads of the ships and things like that, because you're messing around. You don't really know the dynamics of how it works, and the pieces aren't going to come back together nice and clean.
Oh, yeah. So this has kind of been prepping up to this question right here. Because I wanted to really get a good idea of, you know, how, what you thought about the whole Montauk Philadelphia experiment. And so my question is basically, do you believe that either or both of those events happened?
Well, I think the truth's always in the middle. I think the truth is always somewhere in the middle. And I think there are elements of that had transpired and have transpired.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there are elements that have been fictionalized and fantasized, like most conspiracy theories. I think the truth tends to be in the middle. I think you pull any conspiracy theory out of the house, like UFOs, and you'll get the widely fantastic. You'll get the things that are spun out of the myth that has been built. So it's easy to replicate because it's been told so often that people can pull the common elements out of it. And then I think that there are things that people just completely fantasize about because it's just so out there and they're attracted to that. So I think there's all, it's in the middle.
You consider UFOs to be a conspiracy? Well, don't you know that those are real?
Well, I'm not talking about the UFOs being a conspiracy. I'm talking about the, and we talked about it last week. I'm talking about any acknowledgement of their existence or extraterrestrial life, that kind of stuff.
Kind of like no little green man has come down and said, "Hey, everybody, how's it going?"
Right. I mean, there a lot of people say that. Why wouldn't they just come and talk to anybody? Why would they talk to certain people? But then again, there are people saying, "Well, what are you kidding me? I've been snatched up by them or whatever." So, you know, that's what I mean about the truth in the middle. It's so wild to dismiss it. I mean, it is so prevalent to hear these stories. There's some template or archetype that came from it. I mean, they've been telling these stories since as far as the history we recognize, like Egypt and stuff like that. There's references to extraterrestrials. So there's got to be some truth that's born of. You figure that someone wouldn't just wildly make it up. But at the same time, what's the extent of the truth?
And I think that's the question I asked you at the end of last week's episode. What would be the conspiracy that, you know, keeps your interest the most? You know, every time you're like, what would be on your top 10 conspiracy theories and what would be at number one? And you said, oh, you know, Montauk, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I like the Montauk stuff. I like the playing around with the technology and the idea. Well, you know why I think I like that one so much is because it does mess with time and space.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're playing with time and space. And that kind of stuff is like, you can play with that? You can play with the time and space? Really? Wow. I think it's pretty cool that they can do that.
Since I asked you what would be your number one, you know, what would be another one that you, another conspiracy that you'd find, you know, kind of fascinating and whatnot?
Let's see here. There's conspiracies that I'm really intrigued by, and there's, because I think they're true conspiracies, and there's conspiracies that I'm like, okay, you guys are reaching. And the JFK conspiracy, I think there's huge merit to that because none of it makes any sense.
Hmm.
I mean, you've got the whole magic bullet thing. You've got multiple shots fired, and you've got
break it down for us, David.
Well,
let us into your mind of how your mind is working around this particular conspiracy, because I'm really interested, because this is one of those that I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about myself, and I haven't done a lot
JFK?
Of research. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's all sorts of, you know, there's the Zapruder footage that shows the shots being, no, I can't remember which one the Zapruder film captured. I don't know if he's the one who captured the actual shooting or if he captured the grassy knoll part, but I can't remember. But there, it seems very plausible that this was an inside job, I guess I would say. If you ask yourself, go with Occam's razor. Why would anyone want to kill the president?
Yeah, because he's going against the powers that be.
Right, exactly.
The larger powers that be.
The larger powers that be. Well, the people who have an interest in something that he has a potential to go against. I mean, I don't want to Oliver Stone this whole thing up. I'm not going to do that. But all the elements that took place were designed, in my opinion, were designed to ensure that he was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
That one of these bullets was going to take him out. And there's too many shots fired. There's that don't follow any laws of physics that we can see. There's that whole magic bullet thing. And there's the way his head moved when he was shot. And there are just all sorts of crazy things that doesn't seem like one lone guy in a book depository would be able to pull off. And what they try to pin on Oswald as far as why he did this, well, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense why he would shoot Kennedy. And Kennedy had all sorts of really nefarious ties as well that would lead you to wonder.
The whole conspiracy, we mentioned briefly a minute ago, you know, the larger powers that be that are larger than any, you know, one president or monarch or dictator or anything like that. You know, I think that's getting into the whole conspiracy of, you know, a world order, kind of like the Illuminati type thing.
What's your take on the Illuminati?
I think specifically the word Illuminati and what that applies to is done and gone. Whatever people were using that name or whatever is over with and done, because I don't think a power such as like a New World Order, where the people that pull the strings of nations and cultures and civilizations, would let something like that go just, you know, outhandle it, just, you know, whatnot. So my idea is that if this alleged world order, because I think we're going to say that a lot this episode, is the alleged, if they basically went to a different code word or a different name or something like that they refer to themselves, then it's like, oh yeah, we're done with that. We're never using that again. Let's give the conspiracy theorists and everybody just a little bit of fun to play with. And, oh yeah, let's have a patsy go out and, okay, so yeah, we don't like your you know, third cousin from your wife, because she said some really mean things at a, you know, a party last year. And so we're going to make him the patsy and everything. And, you know, create this whole thing where it's like they're able to maintain their anonymity but still put that stuff out that could also be a kind of a redirection of moving people away from finding out more information about, you know, the world order and how it works and everything, and then having it go public. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. Now, if you ask me, do I believe that there's a world order type thing going on, I'm still out on that. I still really don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. I just think that it's all power bases. And I think there are people who make decisions that try to influence decisions. And it, to me, it's pretty transparent. It's when the U.S. is playing games for the control of resources, because if you look historically, we've, as far as civilizations go, had wars based on control of resources.
Mm-hmm.
It always boils down to control of resources. In this case, the most lucrative resource right now is oil, because the highest profits you can generate is through the oil company. And the illusion of dependence on oil is so pervasive and so insidious that it's too attractive to want to control it, to gain the power of profit. So when we're messing around in these countries that have this resource, to me, it's a no-brainer. It has to do with just resource control. Resource control is ensured by the war machines, and the war machines are ensured by the people who manufacture the tools that participate in war. And those people dump a bunch of money into lobbies, and those lobbies whisper sweet nothings in the ears of our lawmakers. And to me, there's no conspiracy there. It's pretty clear. Really, they're not even trying to hide it, if you ask me. We want your oil. We're going to go take it. You know, look at it. We're America. You guys see us taking the oil? You see us securing our interests in the oil? We're not going to really take it, but what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that we're on the right side of the people who've got it.
And we're doing it all to bring democracy to non-democratic world, countries, because democracy is the way to be, because it's worked for us right now.
But let me ask you this, Donald. See, here's why I think the conspiracy theories could be useless sometimes. I'm going to go with what you just said. The same guy who's just like, yeah, we need to ensure democracies in these other countries. This is the same guy that doesn't need the spin. This is the same guy that if you said, you know what, we're doing it to secure our interests in oil, that person would probably go, yeah, and damn right we should. We're America. We need to drive our big rigs and whatnot. So who's the lie for if the lie is really there?
Well, yeah, my whole thing was being a little sarcastic at the official reasons between going into countries and bringing their people to freedom, freeing their people to, and allowing them to be democratic. Like, the president and the politicians might say that, but it's kind of like, yeah, we're going for oil. Seriously, dude. I mean, really?
Yeah, exactly.
I was delivering pizzas back in early 2000s, and I was standing outside talking to one of my coworkers at the time. You know, we're just like, yeah, what President Bush, G.W. Bush, is doing is... yeah, this is not going to be good. This is going to go really bad, really fast. And there was a consensus there. Let's look at this very simply. President is big oil man, has friends and, you know, people that are into big oil. We use oil for gas. He's not going to be the president forever. He would like to help his friends, you know, be profitable. I think gas prices are going to go up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've gone up. They've never gone back down anywhere near what they were. I mean, they shot up real high, and then they've come down a little bit, and then they've gone up back and forth here and there. I remember in Washington State, which has a little higher gas taxes and everything, and gas, 1 gallon of gas is a little more expensive than other states.
Right.
You know, I could fill up my whole tank for about $15. And I think this was like 2001, 2002, something like that. And now it's probably about $40, $35 right. to $40.
Yeah, somebody had posted a picture of this huge final price on them filling their tank, and they were all angry about it. I wish I were a political cartoonist, because you know what I would write? I would write, "We've got no business in the Middle East," by a guy who's saying this. All we're doing is we're just doing it for oil, and that's just greedy so-and-so's. And I want to have him saying this while he is got a gas nozzle in the tank of like an SUV or something like that. And like, really, are we missing this? So, the beginning of this administration, we had 9/11.
Oh yeah,
event that happened, and there are lots of conspiracy theories around that one, which most of them I'm not buying. I'm not, because they don't really make any sense to me, because fanaticism can drive people to do the most insane things, like fly planes into skyscrapers.
Yeah, I remember shortly thereafter there was a picture of this plane coming that was like maybe a couple hundred feet away from the Trade Center. It was coming right out, and it was kind of like a picture of a guy kind of having a touristy thing, and I was like, okay, people, come on. I'm not a photographic analyst or anything, but even I can tell this is a fake.
Yeah.
First off, if that was going to be right there, I think the camera probably would have been destroyed unless it was on some kind of wireless transmitter thing that instantly transmitted somewhere else. But why would a person on vacation have something of that level of magnitude.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I agree with you. There's a lot of things that come out here and there with conspiracies of, you know, 9/11 in particular. And, yeah, we were talking about it last week. There's a lot of stuff that kind of like, well, wait a second. Did the government or any part of the government know about, oh, there's people, there's an increase in chatter between the Taliban and everyone, and maybe this means they're thinking of something, and we keep getting, our translator people keep saying something about the 9th of September. Then it's just like, well, yeah, and then this agency over here was talking about here, and my memory, and I'd have to look this up, I could be totally off here. My understanding is that's one of the reasons why they, you know, created Homeland Security, or one of the official reasons why they created Homeland Security, is because this agency over here had a piece of information, this agency over here had a piece of information, and this agency over here had a piece of information. They weren't talking to each other, and right. if they were, then they would have a much bigger picture and be like, oh, yeah, something's definitely going down. And Homeland Security is kind of like a nexus where it takes all this information from all these different places and is able to see the bigger picture.
Right.
But at the same time, using disasters and terrorist acts as political means to take away more freedoms and stuff like that, I don't see that as being really good. To give you just an idea, in many places it's illegal to ride a bicycle on the street without a helmet. You can get ticketed for it.
Right.
I stopped riding my bike because of that. I used to love riding my bike, but I hated wearing helmets because one of the things I loved about it is feeling the air hit against my hair and move it in any way it wanted to without feeling like I have a brick on my head. Mm-hmm. And I know some people say, well, you just never found the right helmet. Well, you know, they have helmets that let the air go through. And like, no, it's not the same. Right. It's just not the same. You know, when it came out to a point where, you know, if you want to go have fun and just take your life into your own hands and, you know, not wear a helmet while you go out and bike around, you know, I look at it as that should be your choice. Oh, by the way, we can give you a ticket for it. And I think a lot of conspiracies might come out of people saying, oh, see, this happened, and now we're not able to do this because this is one of our freedoms that has been taken away to, quote-unquote, protect us from this ever happening again. Okay, now there's another freedom taken away because this is supposed to protect us from this happening, and this law is here to, you know, protect us from doing this, and this law is here to protect us from doing that. And I think a lot of people get to a point where it's just like, okay, something's going on because how can we, you know, say everybody has to be safe and we're going to make you be safe because we don't feel you have the discernment to keep yourself safe, and because you don't. And I think this is a fertile ground for conspiracies to start and propagate and become more and more and bigger and things added on here. I'm not saying all conspiracies, but I'm saying definitely some of them.
Well, I think there's a lot of that element that's true. I think that conspiracies are designed on a subconscious level to justify the lack of control we have. I think that's what they are about.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracies are built on mistrust of power, of those who are in power. And it also helps because it creates a victim mentality. Because if you say, well, I didn't know about it, then I couldn't do anything about it. When we say, you know, you're not powerless, if you just let it stand by and let it happen, mm-hmm. then a conspiracy theorist will say to you, well, yeah, but I didn't know what was going on because there was a lie that was told. And because of this lie, there was nothing I could do. If I knew about it, of course I would have done something about it. But I didn't, because that's what they want to do. That's what they, and you always get the, that's what they want you to believe, you know.
Or
that's what they
yeah, or on the other token, it's like, you know, I did it because I was told this is what was happening. Yeah, I was against it, but I was told that it was for like national security or something like that, and that's why I pulled the trigger and everything behind this whole destruction of this little village out that no one has ever heard about.
Is that a conspiracy theory?
It's kind of along the same lines as what you talked about, where it's just like.
Was there a destruction of a village?
No. I'm making a complete analogy here.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
And it's getting out of the military or whatever, and then saying, well, yeah, you know, I didn't know. They didn't tell me, or they were lying to me, that, and that's why I committed all these atrocities. It's going on the other thing of what you're saying, where, like, well, I would have done something about it if I only knew about it, or if I hadn't been lied to.
Right, exactly.
As opposed to, no, I'm not going to do that. Even if that's the truth, I don't think I'm not going to go against my ideals and morals and ethics and stuff to do that.
Well, then why do you think there's a 9/11 conspiracy if that's the case? Because it's not like other conspiracies, like, for example, I don't know, the government putting stuff in your food or corporations doing this to control this stuff. But why do you suppose 9/11 was garnered that? I mean, the idea was that the government had helped to orchestrate the destruction of these towers. Here's the official conspiracy theory. I'm going to start over there. The government helped to orchestrate this, pinned it on these Saudis and these Libyans and stuff like that to make it look like it was a terrorist attack, because they wanted to rally up an incentive and a good reason for American support for us going to war in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
That is the conspiracy theory. And you want to hear something very weird about this?
Sure.
Do you remember a show called The Lone Gunman?
No, I don't.
Do you remember who the Lone Gunmen were?
That name and that title does not resonate with me at all. I don't remember anything about it.
The X-Files.
Oh,
had,
oh
yeah.
X-Files, the Lone Gunmen with the three guys.
The three guys called the Lone Gunmen, where they referred to because they had their kind of little newspaper and they had conspiracy theories all over the place. There was an episode done, and I want to say it was done in 99, maybe? Maybe 2000, I can't remember. There was an episode where a plane had been hijacked by some dark cabal, black government secret room kind of thing, whatever, you know, some Illuminati type idea.
Mm-hmm.
And they had remote controlled this 747 or something like that. And the remote control was programmed to fly this plane into the World Trade Center so that they could drum up support to start a war in the Middle East. I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Not long before that actually happened. And then the conspiracy theories are saying, yeah, of course that idea was out there, and they were already aware of it, and someone actually really orchestrated it. But the thing about it is, the reason it happened is because somebody dropped the ball. Somebody should have seen an airplane coming a long ways out, knowing that it was headed the wrong direction. And, of course, the conspiracy theories say, well, of course they didn't do anything because they sat on their hands because they wanted it to happen. Our government agencies are a mess. Of course they didn't. Obviously, we didn't have these things communicating with each other. But why? Why would we want to make that into a conspiracy? That's what I want to know.
I think to answer your question of why the whole 9/11 catastrophe, well, it created an enormous worldwide emotional shockwave and mental shockwave. I kind of had the feeling, you know, way back before 9/11, oh yeah, nobody can touch us inside our borders because we're America. You know, we have all these security procedures for anyone that tries to come into a border and anything. And if they try to fly in, well, that's not going to work. And if they try to come in by ship, that's not going to work either, because we have all these things where our borders are watched. And I think when that happened, it basically killed anyone's idea how safe we were.
So is it like this? Is it to say, well, we were well protected against all this stuff, and yet it happened. So really, there's no way it could have happened unless our own people were complicit in it.
I think that's one side of it. You go back like 150 years when certain parts of the country were just barely having people build cabins in the mountains and everything like this, and or on planes or somewhere like that. And let's say you're a farmer, you have your livestock and everything. All of a sudden you have these pack of coyotes or wolves, take your pick. And they come in.
I pick coyotes.
Okay. And they come in, and every night they're knocking off some of your livestock. You can go with chickens or cows. Take your pick. It doesn't really matter. Well, you
chickens. I pick chickens.
So there's a coyote in the chicken coop again, Mom.
There you go.
But basically, after you reach a critical point where you're just tired of having that happen and waiting for the coyote to come back and be like, all right, I'm going to get him this time. Okay, forget this. This is not working. And you're like, all right, you junior the second, junior the third, junior the fifth, get your guns. We're going to go out and we're going to take these coyotes out. You know, we got to keep what we got left. And this actually happened with, you know, some of the, you know, Native American stuff, where Native Americans like, dude, you can't build a cabin there. And like, you're too close. We're afraid that you're so close to us, you know, so we're going to make you go away further, and we'll even get the cavalry in, but that's a whole other analogy. Anyway, if your sense of security is messed with, then you get to a point where you no longer just fortify and become defensive. You become offensive, because you're like, we don't know if this, you know, threat that we have is going to be able to do this again, because we didn't think they could do it in the first time. But we do know that if we go out and take them out, they're not going to be able to do anything ever again. You know, this goes along with what you're saying too, where it was such a huge shock emotionally and mentally to, you know, the whole country, and I believe to a large degree the whole world, like, holy crap! Somebody got through the borders and, you know, did some major damage and could have done a lot more of America. What the hell? That kind of starts going into the whole thing of truth is stranger than fiction. America's like, oh my goodness, we're not protected as well as we could be, but we don't want to ever be attacked again by the same people. And the government was saying, it's these people. I'm like, okay, yeah, we're scared and we want to protect ourselves, and if you say it's those people over there, we're going to go over there and take them out. It's been like 10 years, almost 10 years, and Osama bin Laden's still out there. And it's kind of like, you know, hey, why is he still out there and a bunch of other people are, you know, out? And I think it's just, it gives the government a much easier time to say, See what happened right there. Do you remember? Remember that? We're talking about this whole 9/11 thing now, still after 10 years, and other people are talking about it. That's like a catchword for all kinds of politics to do certain things that typically take away certain rights and everything. This is to answer your question of why.
Okay.
Does that make sense, or did I go too many places there?
Yeah, I had a little trouble keeping up in some places, but I think I know what you're trying to say. I think it makes sense. It's kind of a security, lack of security kind of idea.
Yeah, if you're scared, you'll do a lot of things that you may not do when you're not scared.
Right, exactly. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think there's a great deal of truth to that. You lived in Roswell. So how much credence do you give to the, I know it wasn't very long and you were very young, but like, you brought it up at the beginning, or did I bring it up about the UFOs?
I think I may have brought it up in the last week's episode.
So how much credence do you give the idea that we, our military, or whomever, is in contact with extraterrestrial life, and that it's being kept secret from us?
Oh, me personally, I'm going to go with what I was saying the whole time. And like, I totally believe that contact has been made long time ago with what we would consider extraterrestrials.
How would the extraterrestrials know to go to the government? And why would they go to the government?
If you basically show up on the dark side of the moon from a galaxy far, far away, and you start monitoring broadcasts, like, okay, yeah, we have a bipedal species. A few decades ago, on their timeline, they learned about the atomic bomb, and they seem to have a hierarchical system of government and society. There's the president, temporary, who's there all the time. Okay, so we'll talk to the people that are there all the time.
What would be the incentive of an alien race to talk to our government, though?
Well, there could be a number of reasons. If you take the more, we're here to save you from yourself type thing, like, look, we can see that the way you're going is going, you're going to kill your planet in, you know, about 50 years and about a generation and a half. So here's some ideas on how to protect yourself from that.
Well, okay. See, here's why I have trouble with that idea. I have trouble with that idea because if they're so intelligent, they would know, I believe they would see the futility in addressing our government.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Okay, I'm being a little cynical here. And that's it's not often I am. I don't consider myself a very cynical person. But if I were monitoring the human race and I was looking at how we made decisions, the last people I would go to would be the leaders of our country. I would do a kind of a guerrilla tactic, to be honest with you. I would just randomly go to different people and say, hey, look, let me tell you something. If you kind of take this approach to life, you know, things are going to get better for you. And then I would go and pick the next random person and say the same thing. Unless they were extraterrestrials that did not have good intentions.
And that's one of the other things I was talking about. I mean, you can look at it from a number of different ways. Hey, you know, they could be like, they're still using nuclear weapons. Well, let's wait until they blow themselves up, and then we can use our spray or whatever and take care of the radiation. And then, of course, hey, we got a planet. Sweet colonization without having to really get into a whole war thing.
There are theories on that. They're not necessarily, they may or may not be conspiracy theories. I don't think so, because there's not anybody conspiring to do anything. I don't know how far into this we want to go. But there are theories about the Nibiru?
Nibiru.
Nibiru.
Yeah. Or Nibiru, however you pronounce it. Zachariah Sitchin. Is that what you're talking about? Zachariah Sitchin?
I don't know who Zachariah Sitchin is.
The 12th planet.
I thought it was called something else. But yeah, that same idea of the 12th planet that kind of does it 52 year. No. 3600? Well, it's some crazy long number that it orbits and that they're inhabitants of that and that they have dark interests for humanity and because they feed off the negativity that spawned here and all this other stuff. And it's really out there stuff.
We may be thinking about two different but similar, you know, ideas there.
Really?
Possibly. Because my whole thing is Nibiru is on like a 3,600-year orbit. Every 3,600 years or so, it comes close to Earth. And their atmosphere, and I don't understand this at all, needed gold to survive, so they started mining gold from here, and that's why it's considered a precious metal, because they took most of it from Earth and used it to, you know, replenish their atmosphere. I'm like, how does gold work with that? I don't know. When they got here, they were basically like, well, we're not going to mine all this gold. Well, let's create in our labs some genetically enhanced or workers that will do the work for us. And
right.
Is that kind of like the one that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's very similar stories to that. And now what about the Greys?
Oh, the Greys.
They're apparently got some nefarious intentions too, because they're doing probes and all this other stuff. And yeah, there's conspiracies that we are working with the Greys. There is a lot of conspiracies behind that.
And they apparently like beef for some reason.
Beef? Oh, with the cattle mutilations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the Greys with the government conspiracy? Yeah.
Right.
The whole idea that, oh, hey, powerful force, powerful alien force. We'll have a connection with them and everything and make friends and then find out, oh, crap, they don't have our best interest at heart.
So would you say that the birth of this conspiracy is that we were in contact with the Greys and then these dark cabals said, ooh, we screwed up of who we allied with. We better just not say anything to anybody. Whoops. Shh. Let's keep this one a secret.
Yeah, I think it you know, kind of is one of those things where I'm going to use our magic word for this episode, allegedly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How complicit do you think the government is in all these experiences? I mean, we seem to always point to either the government or to some dark cabal of being the source of these conspiracies. And how much credence do you give either of those? You alluded to the fact that you said that the world order you thought was kind of an antiquated idea.
Oh, I don't think it's antiquated. I think it's more of one of those things where I really don't have a real good beat on it one way or the other, because it's like I can see yeses and nos for it being there or not. I think with the Greys specifically, you know, the government has made contact with them, and then they probably realized, oh, yeah, our first contact, yay, they have technology and everything. And I think then they realized, oh, we're screwed now. We signed a quote-unquote contract, and now we can't get out of it for another 40, 50 years. I don't know. But, yeah, I totally lost my train of thought there.
Oh, well, the question was regarding it. How complicit do you believe the government or these, even the existence of these dark groups, these men in black kind of agencies, how much do you think they're really complicit in these conspiracy theories? Because they seem to always point to them.
Well, I mean, I don't think you'll find a hippie living out in the beaches of Venice Beach in California being like, yeah, I am the ambassador from Earth to the whole, you know, alien races and everything, because they don't have influence. They don't have a certain number of power. Like what you said earlier, a good conspiracy has to do with people that are in power. If basically a whole alien race says, we're going to follow him, and it's Bob that runs the surf shack down on the beach, you know, all of a sudden all the world leaders are going to be like, so, Bob, how you doing? What's going on? Yeah, you happy? Are you happy, Bob? Yeah, what can we do to make you happy? I don't think it's along those lines. I think it's more of you go to people that have influence that can actually make changes, that can, you know, influence public personas, public perceptions and stuff like that, so that you can basically go one way or the other. It's one of the other conspiracies that they have is the whole mass media, like subliminal messages in commercials and TV shows and movies.
Right.
If you're interested in controlling the mass populace, yeah, sure, that's one way to do it. And you start bringing in little things here and there, like aliens. They're not evil. Like, they're nice. They're you know, you start off with B movies back in the 40s and 50s, like, anything that's not human is out to take us out and kill us. And like, then you moved into, you know, the 70s. It's like, aliens, we don't know how to communicate with them. And then in the 80s, you had kind of a mix of aliens are bad and they're out to kill us. And then you had other ones that's like, aliens are okay, they're not so bad. And then, you know, getting into the 90s, you had kind of the same thing going on. And now in the past, you know, 10 years, you've had a lot more movies and TV shows and stuff where aliens were friendly and they weren't bad and they're here to help. I think if you're going to be an alien extraterrestrial race, you want to go with people that have the influence over the masses, which would be the governments. And if you're the governments, you don't want to freak people out all of a sudden. You know, you want to kind of bring things in slowly and get people acclimated to the idea of, oh, yeah, there's aliens out there, and, you know, what would happen if they came down? And let's put out this movie here of, like, we'd be nice to them because they're here to help. Yeah, and then show people acting out. This is how you act when you first meet an alien. Basically, that puts it in our memory that if that ever happened, which, you know, if you believe that aliens are real, when they actually present themselves to the world, then it'd be like, okay, we'll act like this. This is how we'll be. And then, of course, they have shows that are starting to go the other way now, where, like, V, they've started redoing from the 1980s series, where it's like, we're here to take over the whole world and take out the population. It's like, oh, geez. The pendulum is swinging back the other way. And so, yeah, I think if you're an alien race, you definitely want to go with the people that have influence and power. And if you're people that do have influence and power, you know, you want to be able to use whatever you can to pull the puppet strings of the mass consciousness and actions.
I don't think it takes much for the powers that be to pull the puppet strings, though. I really don't.
Exactly.
In fact, I think that to really even sew up a conspiracy theory is really sometimes just too much of a reach. Because I said it earlier in this episode, but I'm going to say it again. If we look at Occam's Razor, all you have to do is, if you really think there's a conspiracy, don't look for the secrets that are being spun. You don't have to look that far at all. What you have to do is just look at what's right in front of our faces, and you'll see that what's a conspiracy isn't really a conspiracy, but it can sure look like one. Let me use an example.
Okay.
The pharmaceutical industry. People are like, you know, have all sorts of theories about the pharmaceutical industry wanting to do power by controlling us through medication. Da, 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 da. I'm like, okay, what you do is do this. The pharmaceutical industry says, I want to be very profitable. How do I do that? What I do is I just release a drug that you say you have to take this for the rest of your life and just sell it that way. That's a no-brainer to me. I'm like, is there a conspiracy there? Yes and no. We're complicit in that. We're saying, yeah, we have to take this drug for the rest of our life for us to be okay. It's just whether we buy it or not. It's whether we buy into it or not. Is it a conspiracy? Who knows? Is it transparent? If you open your eyes, it's transparent. If you close your eyes, it's a conspiracy. And it can be the exact same thing from two different perspectives. From one perspective, it's a conspiracy. Is a life-dependent drug like a Zocor and Lipitor? I was on an antistatin for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I used that. I used that as a Zocor. I was on Zocor for a while. But I used that as an example. And the idea is, well, once you go on Zocor, you're on it for the rest of your life, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not. So what I'm saying is that you could either see that as a conspiracy or you could see that as not. And but it's the same idea. Either way you see it, I think people would say, yeah, of course, it's in the drug industry's best interest for you to be on a medication for the rest of your life. How else can they guarantee consistent profitability?
Let's look at it from a different perspective. How much money do the drug companies and medical field establishment, especially in America, how much business do they get from treating people with cancer?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If there was a cure that came out tomorrow that people said, yeah, we've tested it over and over and over again, it works 99% of the time on 99% of the people that we tested it on, what would be the financial impact to the people that make a huge, huge annual profits from treating people with cancer?
Right.
And I think that is one of those kind of conspiracies right there where we have so much technology, we have so much availability, and there are ideas out there that's just like, there are people that say, yeah, we can treat cancer, we can take care of it, no problem. Why are we just hearing about this? Well, because
but that's not a conspiracy, though. That to me is another no-brainer. It's like if the drug companies say, I can make more money treating cancer than I can curing it, I'm going to go for the treatment of cancer. And to me, there's no conspiracy there. It's a no-brainer.
But also, if they have that kind of power and influence, wouldn't they want to suppress anything that would negatively affect their counting?
Oh, of course they would suppress it. But
there is where the conspiracy comes in right there. Because you start having friends and family members dying from cancer when you know that when you start looking into it and you start finding, oh, there's cures out there that actually work, that have been tested and that are reputable. And then you find out, why wasn't I told about this when my aunt or uncle or grandmother or mother or father had cancer? They put them through this really hellish surgery and everything, and all these chemicals and all this stuff, when all they had to do was do this little thing right here and end up much better. And then you start thinking, well, what they say is always follow the money. Well, yeah, they got so much more money out of the insurance companies and stuff from treating my family member or friend this way than they would have if they prescribed an $80 pill for 6 months.
But here's what I'm going to say about that, Donald.
Okay.
I believe in my heart of hearts. In fact, I think it's some Native American idea. It may be Navajo is something. I don't remember the tribe, so forgive me that. But there's a Native American idea that the earth will not hold her secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's the same thing in life is that nothing stays buried. You cannot keep any truth buried. You can't. You could try to bury it, but it just won't stay buried. The pressure will just build up and it'll be somehow or another it's out there. Even if you're a pharmaceutical company trying to bury the truth of things that are actually potent counters to cancer or that can inhibit or push back cancers, if you look hard enough, if you say, I'm not going to buy into just what the pharmaceutical company is telling me because they have a vested interest in this particular method or this particular route in actually, you know, this long-term treatment, I'm going to look elsewhere where that is not a vested interest. If you look hard enough, you can find it. But the thing is we're giving our power away to pharmaceutical companies and other companies by saying, well, they're creating a conspiracy by burying the truth. You can't completely bury a truth. They could try to, and it's for the lazy people. It's the lazy people that are easy to be puppetized. That's a new word. I just made up a new word.
Puppetized.
So I think that's my belief. And that's kind of where I think that the conspiracy theories really run rampant, because we don't want to be bothered to really find the truth when the truth is out there. We just want to.
I'll give you a scenario that goes right along with what you're saying. You know, somebody has an illness and they do all this research and they find that there are four different possibilities that have shown great success over a number of years that people have been researching on them. You know, we're not talking like 30-40% success rate. We're talking a consistent, stable 60-80% success rate with illness patients that have gone this route. And all of a sudden you start contacting these people and like, it's about $1,000 a treatment. Like, okay, first thing you do, you go to your health insurance. If by chance you actually have health insurance, oh, guess what? Health insurance doesn't pay it. Well, then you'll have to pay it out of pocket. Well, we don't have it out of pocket. Well, we can't just sit there and do nothing. Well, health insurance will pay for this, you know, this whole big chemotherapy surgery and surgery and stuff, but it won't pay for this other thing that's least much less invasive. Well, we either do nothing or we do with what we can afford. I think that is one of the things where a lot of people talk about the conspiracy of the big drug companies, is because if you're given the whole choice of, oh, let my friend or family member die, or go on a way that we can actually afford that will be paid for, you know, I think a lot of people will go with the one that extends life instead of just says, oh, well, see you later.
I see what you're saying. However, you only named two choices.
Okay, what's the third or fourth?
There are out there. I'm saying that when you start seeing that there are only two choices, then you're buying into it. I mean, our world is not that small. Our scope of what we're capable of doing is not that limited. There are a myriad of choices, and when we decide that it's either this or that, then the other is gone. The other is by the wayside. We don't even bother looking at it because we believe, we buy into the idea that we only have two choices. And all you have to do is just say, well, you can do this or that as a pharmaceutical company. And then if we give our power to the pharmaceutical companies, we'll say, oh, well, I guess it's this or that. Never, ever stopping to think that there are other alternatives you could look at. And I'm not throwing the medical pharmaceutical industry out the window. I'm saying that there are some huge, great benefits to medications, but they're not the only answer.
Yeah. I'm just saying it normally comes down to, you know, what you're able to afford and what you're able to find. And if you find something that will work, the next thing is, will you be able to afford it? As exciting and interesting as this conversation is, we really are a little bit over our time for this the length of this episode, so we're going to have to cut it short. And so for TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you the truth.
And I'm David Deere. Keep your eyes and your heart open.